It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 40 degrees and mostly cloudy. At the airport, they are showing southwest winds at 8 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service continues to call for sunny skies today with a high near 43, calm winds turning to the southeast to 5 this afternoon. A chance of snow tonight mixing with rain and snow. Chance of rain and snow tomorrow, then a chance of rain after that, and then for Tuesday night, look for the rain to start up in earnest, mixed with snow, could be heavy at times. Coming up on the Midday Report, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Representative Mary Peltola gave video presentations on Thursday at ComFish. They talked about closing a Russian import loophole for seafood. Persistent outages of weather observation stations across Alaska have caused problems for lots of people. The Alaska State Legislature is hoping the federal government will do something about it. And tribal citizens are in Sitka are being squeezed out of Sitka's housing market. Some are leaving town, according to a new study. Those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The first criminal trial against a former president of the United States is underway in New York. Donald Trump is fighting charges related to so-called hush money payments he's accused of making nearly 8 years ago to protect his presidential campaign. Jurors are being selected. NPR's Jimena Bustillo reports, as Trump's often done, the former president addressed the cameras before he headed into the courtroom this morning.
Before going in, Trump reiterated his claims that he is being persecuted. Unlike past civil trials that Trump has come to the Empire State for, he has to be here in person every day for this criminal trial. Trump, who is the presumptive GOP nominee for president, has argued that this interferes with his ability to campaign around the country. This morning, Trump's legal team tried and failed to delay the trial. He is facing 34 counts connected to payments made to adult film actor Stormy Daniels. The district attorney prosecuting him argues that the payments were made in an attempt to conceal information about an alleged affair ahead of the 2016 election. Trump has pleaded not guilty. Jimena Bustillo, NPR News, New York.
The White House says it is working with G7 countries on possible new multilateral sanctions to target Iran's missile program and other programs following Iran's retaliatory attacks on Israel over the weekend. Earlier today, President Biden reaffirmed U.S. support for Israel.
Iran launched an unprecedented aerial attack against Israel, and we mounted an unprecedented military effort to defend Israel. Together with our partners, we defeated that attack.
Biden addressed reporters as he was hosting the Prime Minister of Iraq, Mohammad Shia al-Sudani. Their meeting was scheduled long before the Iran strike Saturday, but it was a reminder of the sensitive diplomatic ties between the U.S. and Iraq. Some of the Iranian drone and missile launches flew through Iraqi airspace. Others were launched from Iraq by Iran-backed groups. The head of the United Nations calls this a heartbreaking milestone, 1 year since war broke out in Sudan. He says it is a conflict that is not getting enough attention. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the two rival generals who started this war are each still betting they can win. But he says it's a war that's being waged on the Sudanese people, millions of whom are now facing hunger.
The Sudanese people need more than humanitarian support. They need an end to the bloodshed. They need peace. And the only path out of this horror is a political solution.
He says he's deeply alarmed that militias attacked and burned villages near El Fasher in the Darfur region. A full-scale assault on that city, he says, could spark ethnic violence across the country and upend humanitarian operations in a region already on the brink of famine. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski and U.S. Representative Mary Peltola gave video presentations on Thursday at Kodiak's commercial fisheries trade show, Comfish. The seafood industry is facing historic challenges, and as KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, the pair hope closing a loophole on Russian imports could help bolster Alaska's presence in markets.
Murkowski and Peltola addressed the current state of Alaska's commercial fishing industry in a pre-recorded video on the opening day of Comfish. Both noted the historic slump has led several seafood processing companies like Peter Pan and Trident to sell off plants. The common claim from the companies has been a tumultuous global market. Representative Mary Peltola told attendees she blames the industry's struggles on Russia undercutting the U.S.
Alaskan fishermen are at an unfair disadvantage competing against the unsustainable fishing and forced labor of foreign imports.
Russian seafood products were banned from the U.S. years ago. However, there was a loophole in the legislation. Russian-caught fish being processed in other countries like China were still allowed to be imported and sold in American markets. That loophole was open until President Joe Biden signed an executive order closing it late last year. The new ban will take effect next month. Senator Lisa Murkowski shared a similar sentiment in her video as well.
When I spoke to you all a year ago, there was really no telling what 2023 had in store for us. We did not know the extent to which Russia's predatory pricing would upset the global market. We did not know that base prices for salmon would plummet.
To help stimulate the industry, Murkowski says she's working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to continue purchasing Alaska seafood. The USDA bought about $200 million worth of Alaska seafood last year and has already announced plans to buy nearly another $150 million worth this year. Murkowski also brought up a continued push from the Alaska's congressional delegation to include fisheries in the upcoming federal farm bill reauthorization. I'm Brian Benwell.
Persistent outages of weather observation stations across Alaska have caused problems for rural communities, aviators, and climatologists for years. Now the Alaska State Legislature is hoping to spur the federal government to do something about it. KMXT's Davis Hovey has this report.
A joint resolution working through the Alaska State Legislature would urge the U.S. Congress to address automated weather observing system, also called AWOS, outages persistently happening across the state. The legislation was heard for the first time on Tuesday by the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. The owner of Alaska Air Transit, Daniel Owen, told legislators of a recent weather station outage his company experienced when flying a charter for the Lower Yukon School District.
Our job was to go out to Scammon Bay and Hooper Bay and pick up some school kids. Neither one of the AWOSs was functioning 100%. The Scammon Bay AWOS was completely out of service.
AWOS weather stations collect data on weather conditions, wind direction, and speed, along with other critical information needed for pilots. If a station in an Alaska community is not reporting weather data and another federally approved weather source is not available, then a commercial pilot cannot legally or safely fly there. But Daniel Knesick, Vice President of Commercial Operations with Grant Aviation, says there are workarounds that pilots use sometimes when an AWOS is not transmitting.
There's times when we have to provide a radio to a village agent in the village so we can call them and they can play the weather reporting over the radio onto the phone call just so we can receive the weather briefing in order to be legal to fly IFR to that destination.
The Federal Aviation Administration is responsible for the vast majority of weather stations and aviation-related infrastructure in the state. The agency operates and maintains over 100 stations across Alaska, while the National Weather Service is in charge of about 40. But according to data from the FAA, on an average day last year, about one out of every three weather stations was experiencing some type of outage. Advocates agree that AWOS outages are a multi-layered issue. Given the lack of infrastructure in Alaska, what does exist is antiquated, using mainly copper wire to transmit the data from AWOS stations. Station maintenance can also take months.
In the part of the United States where the environment is changing most rapidly, we just can't afford to have this loss of information.
Rick Toman is a climatologist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy. He says depending on the type of outage, an AWOS station could fail to transmit data to the web, but could still be collecting data, or it could be offline altogether.
If that data is not online, it's gone. We can't get it. That information cannot be ingested into, say, weather models because it's not online.
The irony is, sometimes the FAA maintenance worker tasked with fixing the AWOS issue cannot fly into the community due to the local weather station being offline, prolonging the gap in service. Toman says various stations have gone months or even a year or more without transmitting vital weather data.
Western Alaska and Southwest Alaska have been particularly hard hit by this outage. On St. Lawrence Island, the FAA weather station at Gamble has not reported reliably since late 2022.
The FAA noted this was an issue years ago and prioritized AWOS in its Alaska Aviation Safety Initiative. That plan includes actionable steps the administration is working on through the end of this fiscal year. Improving aviation safety has also been a priority of Alaska's congressional delegation, given that the state has the highest rate of aviation fatalities in the country. There's currently legislation working its way through the U.S. Senate to address some of these issues. Advocates hope the FAA Reauthorization Act of 2024 will include language forcing the FAA to address AWOS outages in Alaska. As for the joint resolution currently being heard in the state capitol, it is scheduled for another hearing before the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee on April 16th. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
Peter Pan Seafood announced on Friday it was ceasing operations. The state-backed seafood processor has faced mounting troubles, including legal claims from fishermen claiming back-owed payments for unpaid deliveries of fish. The company made the announcement Friday night on Facebook, saying it was, quote, saddened to share that Peter Pan Seafoods will be halting operations at its processing plants, close quote. That includes the discontinuation of both summer and winter production. Another seafood giant, Silver Bay Seafoods, announced it would acquire Peter Pan's Valdez facility, as well as operate Peter Pan's facilities in Dillingham and Port Moeller during the 2024 salmon season. That announcement left out King Cove, the eastern Aleutian community where Peter Pan's largest processing facility is located. Commentators on Facebook expressed frustration and disappointment that the company waited until less than 2 months before the start of salmon season to announce its summer plans.
The health impacts of
King Cove, a community of about 800 residents, relies on the processing facility as its main economic engine. The city already faced hardship when Peter Pan opted last minute not to open for winter's A season, forcing local fishing boats to scramble for new facilities where they could deliver their catch. Peter Pan said current or former employees can seek processing jobs at Silver Bay Seafoods, but did not specify which facilities would be hiring. An Alaska conservation group has released a new series of reports criticizing Alaska's state-owned investment bank as ineffective. The Alaska Beacon reported that economists Greg Erickson and Milt Barker wrote the reports on behalf of the group Salmon State. They concluded that the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority's flagship loan program created few Alaska jobs and has accumulated a large endowment with little oversight. Salmon State is an initiative of the New Venture Fund, a left-of-center national organization, and opposes some of the infrastructure projects backed by ADA. The reports arrive as ADA seeks permission from the Alaska legislature to borrow as much as $300 million for a variety of as-yet-undefined mining projects.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
Tribal citizens in Sitka are being squeezed out of Sitka's housing market, and some are leaving town, according to a new study commissioned by Baranof Island Housing Authority, or BIHA, with support from the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, or STA. Now they are hoping the data and community input will help guide them towards solutions. Cliff Richter is the executive director of BIHA. He says the last tribal housing needs assessment was conducted about 5 years ago.
Our data was getting a little stale. 2018, 2019 was the last thing remotely close to this.
BIHA and STA collected responses from over 300 Alaska Native or Indigenous households in Sitka and nearly 200 households outside of Sitka. The survey found that native residents in Sitka are more likely to rent instead of own, live in older housing and mobile homes, and to rely on friends or family for shelter. The survey also found that tribal citizens are leaving Sitka at a higher rate than other residents. Robin Sherman is the communications director for Sitka Tribe of Alaska.
An astounding number of the people who responded said that they were really interested in living in Sitka, but lack of housing, you know, or affordable housing was a big barrier.
Richter says the survey data has already influenced decision-making at BIHA. They are now prioritizing higher-density housing and smaller lots in planning a new subdivision on Herb Diedrichson Drive. They have other ideas on strategies to expand affordable housing, like weatherization and replacing mobile homes. But Richter says the next step is to involve the community in establishing priorities and solutions. While the survey focused on tribal housing needs, Richter says the issue and the solutions are community-wide.
We're seeing this as information that's going to benefit the entire community.
Baranoff Island Housing Authority, Sitka Tribe of Alaska, and the City and Borough of Sitka co-hosted a community meeting on Thursday to share strategies for expanding affordable housing in Sitka and to solicit ideas from the community on how to solve the problem. The former Soldotna teacher and union president, charged with 61 counts related to sexual abuse of a minor, appeared in court on Friday for a hearing about evidence in the case. KDLL's Riley Board has this update.
Nathan Erfurth, who taught at Soldotna High School and worked as president of the area's teachers union, was arrested in May 2023 on charges related to an alleged sexual relationship with a former student who was a minor at the time. Police obtained a warrant and secretly recorded several conversations between the student and Erfurth, which they say provided evidence of the crimes. He was later charged with more than 60 counts by a grand jury. Erfurth pleaded not guilty to all counts, and in January, his attorney Eric Derleth filed a motion to dismiss the case, citing cherry-picked evidence, a failure to tell the grand jury about the many times Erfurth denied the relationship, and mistranscriptions of the recorded conversations. The state responded with 21 pages of mostly transcripts in its opposition to the motion and said it had no obligation to present Erfurth's, quote, self-serving denials to the grand jury. Based on the content of those transcriptions, Derleth requested an evidentiary hearing to review those discrepancies, citing specific sentences where the state and defense's transcriptions differ. During the two-hour hearing Friday morning at the Kenai Courthouse, Derleth played several audio clips from the secret recordings that involved Erfurth denying he and the former student ever engaged in a sexual relationship. Then he addressed a line from the state's transcription that he says has been critically misinterpreted. In the original affidavit, the student is quoted as asking whether he, quote, regretted sleeping with her, to which Erfurth says if the consequences are jail time, he absolutely does. But the defense argues that line is a mistranscription. What she actually asks, Derleth says, is, are you starting to regret taking me in, a reference to the close family-like relationship between them. The audio quality of the recording is poor, because the primary recording device failed. Erfurth took the stand to testify that he was answering the question, do you regret taking me in, on the recording. The judge also allowed Derleth to play a version of that audio clip that Erfurth cleaned up himself using computer software. During cross-examination, the prosecutor asked if Erfurth was already aware that he was under investigation at the time of the recordings, which he said he was. The prosecutor did not concede that there were issues in the state's transcriptions and said Erfurth's interpretation of the line was favorable to his case. Derleth and the prosecutor both opted to submit written closing comments within the next 2 weeks. Erfurth's next court appearance is a hearing scheduled for June. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Alaska Democrats unanimously chose President Joe Biden in party elections over the weekend as their candidate for president. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Democratic Party members from all around the state got together in person and online Saturday to nominate the incumbent president for re-election.
President Biden won all 17 of Alaska's state delegates to the national convention, meaning he won the state of Alaska.
State Democratic Party Chair Michael Wenstrup concedes that's probably no surprise to anyone because his only challenger, Minnesota Congressman Dean Phillips, dropped out of the race last month and endorsed the president. But also because the unanimous voice vote shows Biden has strong support among Alaska Democrats.
There was no protest votes that I've been made aware of. Everyone that participated enthusiastically supported President Biden.
A news release issued after Saturday's presidential preference primary says party leaders went ahead and conducted the vote despite the lack of a challenger because they, quote, remained committed to a democratic process to determine presidential preference, unquote. But Wenstrup says the leadership decided to downsize the non-competitive proceeding.
Rather than to run a more expensive primary that could cost us upwards of $400,000 or more, we decided, since there was only one nominee on our ballot, to simply have each district caucus meet and cast their vote in their districts.
He says party members in all 40 state districts got together to weigh in on the nominee, including regional get-togethers in Anchorage and the Mat-Su.
Only Juneau and Fairbanks met in person. The rest of the districts met on their own, via Zoom or in person, depending on the logistics and the size of their districts or region.
Also Saturday, Democrats elected delegates to the party's state convention to be held next month in Juneau. The delegates will review the party's platform and bylaws and will, in turn, elect delegates to the national convention to be held in August in Chicago. Biden and former President Donald Trump are the presumed candidates of their respective parties for the November 5th general election. Alaska Republicans selected Trump as their nominee over rival candidate Nikki Haley during their party's March 5th presidential preference poll. Alaska voters also will cast ballots for local and state office and possibly a ballot measure during this busy election year. The partisan primary is scheduled for August 20th, and the winners of those races will then seek election during the November 5th general. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Americans keep spending despite higher prices. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. Retail sales increased 0.7% last month, outpacing the monthly increase in prices. The Commerce Department also upwardly revised February data to show a 0.9% rise. The March increase was driven by online and general merchandise stores. Sales fell at furniture, electronics, and appliance stores. The FBI this morning boarded the cargo ship that crashed into the Key Bridge in Baltimore. The agency said it was conducting a court-authorized search. Multiple reports said it has launched a criminal probe. Quarterly profits at Goldman Sachs beat Wall Street expectations. They were up 28% as its investment bank division benefited from more corporate deal-making. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/trendingtopics.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 15th day of April, the year 2024, tax day. Yesterday, record high temperature for this date was 57 degrees set in 2018, and a record low was 17 set in 1977. Currently, a relatively warm 40 degrees in Kodiak under mostly cloudy skies. Southwest winds at 8 miles per hour at the airport right now, where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service insists we will see sunny skies today at some point, with a high near 43 and calm winds turning to the southeast at 5 or so this afternoon. A chance of snow tonight after 10 p.m., mixing with rain after 4 a.m., increasing clouds overnight tonight with a low around 33, south winds to 10, and a chance of rain and snow until the afternoon tomorrow, followed by a chance of rain with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 41, southeast winds to 15. And the weather is expected to begin on Tuesday night. Look for rain before 7, followed by rain and snow. That rain and snow could be heavy at times. Low around 36 overnight for Tuesday night. East winds to 30, increasing to 35 or 40 after midnight. Could gust as high as 45 miles per hour on Tuesday night. Look for that heavy rain to continue for Wednesday and Wednesday night. And we're going to have more rain for the rest of the week. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanek, Kodiak's east side out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for tomorrow, southwest 15 becoming southeast 20 tonight, 2-foot seas, building to 5 feet tonight. For tomorrow, east 30, seas to 6 feet. And for Tuesday night, east winds to 45 knots, seas to 14 feet. Look for them to build to 19 feet on Wednesday. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Tuesday, southwest winds to 20 knots, becoming southerly tonight, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, east winds to 20 knots, increasing to 30 knots in the afternoon, 4-foot seas building to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. And for tomorrow night, east winds to 45 knots, seas to 11 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Monday, April 15th, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting in the Providence Barometer Conference Room at 3 p.m. On Tuesday, April 16th, the Solid Waste Contract Committee will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 1 p.m. On Wednesday, April 17th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, April 18th, the Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Are you grieving a loss? Join them at GriefShare, a weekly grief support group, to find hope and healing after the death of a loved one. It goes on April 15th through July 8th on Mondays, 5:30 to 7 p.m. The first meeting is tonight at 5:30 p.m. in the Community Baptist Church, which is at 216 Mill Bay Road. For more information, contact Sandra West at 907-539-6429. Lots of things going on this week and next for Whale Fest. On Wednesday, you can watch the movie Whale Rider at 6:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. It's a movie about New Zealand's Wangara people who believe their ancient ancestor arrived on the back of a whale. Again, that's 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday at the library. On Thursday at 12 p.m., it's the book launch at the Lutic Museum of From the Past to the Future. It's their latest publication, A History of Kodiak's Aleutic and Supiak People, written by local scholars. That's at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. That's happening Thursday at 12 p.m. For more information, contact them at 907-487-2626. And on Thursday, the Kodiak Marine Mammal Stranding Update will be happening. What do you do when you find a stranded whale? The Shunack Tribe of Kodiak will provide an update on their stranding program efforts. That's happening at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. And contact Matt Dale at 907-531-5009 for more information. But again, that's on 4 p.m. on Thursday at the Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center.
The Arctic Care Mission is coming to Kodiak. Kodiak Area Native Association is partnering with the U.S. military to bring no-cost healthcare services to the Kodiak community and surrounding villages. Clinic services will be available from May 9th through May 20th at the Daniel Lee Harmon Kodiak Readiness Center and the Kodiak College. There are no special eligibility requirements for accessing Arctic Care services. Details about available services and how to access them will be released soon. To stay up to date on Arctic news, please visit kodiakhealthcare.org or follow the Kodiak Area Native Association Facebook page.
Tomorrow is National Healthcare Decision Day. And CANA, Senior Citizens of Kodiak, the Kodiak Hospice and Palliative Care, Providence Elder House, the Alaska Legal Services, and the Independent Living Center have all come together to offer a bunch of advice for you from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Senior Center tomorrow. It'll start at 10 a.m. with a certified Medicare counselor. They will be available to talk about benefits, checkups, and have checkups on a first-come, first-served basis. Again, that's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. 10 a.m. to 12:30, Alaska Legal Services will be available for one-on-one services. 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m., Advanced Health Care Directives will be presented by PKIMC Palliative Care Nurse Practitioner Aaron Carter. And from 1:30 all the way to 4 p.m., there will be informational booths from CANA, the Elder House, the Independent Living Center, senior citizens of Kodiak, and the hospice and palliative care. So lots going on at the Senior Center tomorrow between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. for National Healthcare Decision Day.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.